What is up, sports fans? It is that time. Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. I am your host, King Cash, joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
Get fired up, Kaz. It's Pro Bowl weekend.
Pro Bowl weekend. It is the NFL Pro Bowl weekend. They have their skills showdown going on. I think it's I think they're starting the AFC-NFC game they're either starting it soon or not too long after we start recording this podcast. So that's something to if you haven't checked it out, maybe go see some highlights. What else is going on this weekend, VZ?
The NHL All-Star weekend is also this weekend. This is kind of, since there's kind of a gap in football, like I'm not going to count the actual Pro Bowl game because nobody watches that. but because nobody watches that, that's like the one gap that other things can squeeze into, and not have to feel like they got to compete with football. NHL All-Star weekend this weekend. And they kind of do this weird thing where, each division gets, they name all stars for each division, and then each division competes in a 3-on-3 tournament. Just a 4-team 3-on-3 tournament.
It's like a north, south, east, west kind of thing.
Yeah. Except it's like the Pacific. I don't know the NHL divisions off the top.
We're learning here. This is what Sports Odds and Ends is all about. One of our biggest struggles and something that we need more people's help with is we are trying to learn hockey. We are trying, but it is hard for us. So if you know what the different divisions are called, please let us know either on Twitter or send us an email.
The Atlantic Division, the Metropolitan Division, the Central Division, and the Pacific Division. So the Pacific Division won.
Metropolitan. All right. No. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you should know that one because that's where the Devils play and the Islanders play and I guess all the New York teams. There's also a women's exhibition as well. Okay. Just a 20-minute game between Canada and USA, prominent women's hockey players. So. A lot of which have been boycotting the NWHL this season because they're trying to raise awareness of the fact that they still don't make enough money to be able to sustain a career as a women's hockey player.
A storyline we have talked about very much on this show, but generally either in a different sport, just women not getting paid enough in their sport that they currently represent. Most notably, we talked about women's soccer, women's basketball, and now the NHL. Whereas in those other two sports, in the previous years, we have seen a little bit of uptake in those things. So women's soccer inked a new deal kind of middle late last year. Early this year, we saw a new deal coming for the WNBA, a collective bargaining agreement, which actually puts them in a better place than they currently were. And I think that of the two that we've seen so far, that was the one we liked.
Yes. That was definitely the one that was the most we're all in on our talent type of deal. And the others are still kind of just clawing and scratching for everything they can get.
Yeah, I think soccer in probably the next year or two will definitely see something bigger come, because I think soccer has taken, especially the U.S. By storm. And I think it's one of those sports that translates a lot more on the women's side and the men's side. I think the skill set is a little bit more even. There's a few other things that more aerobatics that might happen in men's soccer, but it's very few and far in between. So I think it's one of those things where it's like there's not enough difference here to really make that cry that a lot of people tend to try to make.
We're getting breaking news right now that
Wow, this is just coming in straight from TMZ. just a minute ago, guys. I'm getting this just now. Kobe Bryant, one of the all-time great NBA players, has reportedly died in a helicopter crash in Calabasas, California this morning. He was traveling with others in his own private helicopter, and word from TMZ is that the helicopter crashed, and it looks like Kobe Bryant was in the helicopter and he didn't make it, and that's straight from TMZ. And
yeah,
very often they're usually first on point with these.
Yeah, they're usually they're pretty sleazy, but they're almost never wrong. And really do hope they are wrong on this, but
I'll definitely be keeping tabs on this as it develops, but you guys can continue, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye on this one as it develops.
All right. Yeah, that's something we'll keep our eyes on. Thoughts and prayers out to the Bryant family. That's a rough one. But yeah, let's keep going here. So let's talk a little bit about the Pro Bowl itself and their skills showdown that they have going on as part of this weekend's festivities, which I thought was actually interesting. I caught a little bit of it as it was going on. I caught most of the quarterback skill showdowns part of this weekend, which starred some of our favorite people, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, taking part in some of these things, who did not do so well. Deshaun Watson, also from the NFC side. But Russell Wilson and those guys had a pretty good showing out there today.
Yeah, so you sent me a clip of the skills competition earlier, and so it's like Russell Wilson throwing into a bunch of circles that were circular targets, and then while there was
thread the needle, they called it
thread the needle. Okay, while they were there were like defenders trying to block those those throws, so that looked like it was pretty fun. I also saw clips of the dodgeball game where specifically the clip of Jarvis Landry just eliminating an entire field by catching everything that was thrown at him, which in all the dodgeball I've seen, whether it's the movie or all the various attempts at various professional dodgeball leagues, I've never quite seen that happen before. It highlights just how perfect that competition is for a wide receiver to participate in. When you brought up like the skills competition, I was like, okay, well, is this just going to showcase quarterbacks? Because the game itself, football itself, just only showcases the quarterbacks a lot of the time. It's nice to see like other positions also get to do.
Yeah, I think they came up with really good events and really good like group events to showcase different skill sets in the NFL, right? Because like the dodgeball competition, in a sense, right, you give it to the quarterback to kind of throw and try to get people out, and you also give it to the wide receivers and cornerbacks, who can use their abilities at being able to catch and read the ball to do those things. And it's just really interesting.
Yeah. And I've said before, when it comes to All-Star games, I want to see them do anything except the sport that they've spent all season playing.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to see them do just, you know, like I want to see NFL players play golf. I want to see NFL players play tennis. Like, I want to see them, you know, play esports, like, you know, do anything else. Like, I've watched you play football all season long. I don't need to see you keep playing football, or I don't know, play a different position than what you normally play. Like, I just, you know,
Well, even like, in some of the skill competition, the throwing competitions, they let wide receivers participate.
See, that's cool. And
yeah,
like they should let linemen participate too. Like, you know, like everybody, you know, like for the NBA All-Star Weekend, I've always thought, like, you know, everybody in the building should get to play knockout. Like, it's. We've got to see them perform at an excellent level at, you know, under the highest levels of pressure all year long, or in the case of some of the places that do the All-Star game in halfway through the season, we've got to see it for half a year. Like, we don't need to see them do the same things over and over again. So
yeah,
come up with more creative stuff and people will start tuning in again. Mm-hmm. Because
I definitely think this was one of those things. I definitely think this weekend kind of did that showcase of that. So I think that's definitely interesting. So something else to take note of is Russell Wilson was set to be the starting quarterback for his side, but has decided to let Drew Brees take the start. What do you think of that storyline?
So I think that lends itself to kind of speculation on our mm-hmm. part. I mean, it could just be Russell Wilson being a nice guy, because he's just a nice guy. Just a really, 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 really hard person to hate. as much as, like, you know, all the being a 49ers fan kind of makes you want to hate him, but you just can't. He's just too nice. And but it also kind of raises the question that, is this the end for Drew Brees? And like, is he retiring, and could this possibly be the last game we ever see him play? And I don't think so, just because I don't feel like he certainly wasn't what was holding the New Orleans Saints back. I would say that would actually be the refs more than anything else. I mean, he's been fine. Like, I don't think he's struggled that much this year. He is getting up there in age, but as we've seen from, you know, Tom Brady's like 40 something, and he's still gonna keep playing. And I think until I'm always of, some people are like, you know, you retire when you're at the top, and I totally disagree with that. I think you should play until it is very clear that you don't belong in the league anymore. And and that is, you know, you'd go out the way Jerry Rice went out, getting cut in the middle of getting cut from the team in the preseason. Like, play for 25 years. Give
VZ. This is an interesting thought, because I'm very much of the opinion that if you've won and you feel like you've reached the top, like, for example, if you've been in the league for like 15 years and you're the veteran that wants to go to a team and go after a ring, and then you reach that goal, why not leave on top?
I certainly think there's a valid argument to that. I just feel the other way, just because I just want to see these guys play for longer, if that's what they want to do. If they feel like they're dragging it out, but they're sticking around just for the ring and the ring chasing, then yeah, you can go get your ring, and then. And then your service is up, then, and you can go. Not that you have to stay otherwise, but
I guess, as a fan, I don't want to see certain guys who stay maybe for way too long, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard when you can, like, if they play at a position of congestion, like the quarterback position, maybe you could argue that they're blocking somebody else's opportunity. But I think, like, at the moment, you know, Drew Brees is, you know, I think he's still pretty clearly better than Teddy Bridgewater. So I don't think he's stopping anybody there. I think it's up to the teams to decide and make that choice of when to go with the switch. You know, it is hard. You do carry weight with you when you are kind of a living legend that is still participating. But I think the cutthroat competitive nature of the NFL and sports in general kind of makes it so that you have to make those tough decisions sometimes. You could argue the 49ers got rid of Jerry Rice like 10 years too soon. He managed to have still a productive career even after they thought he was nearing the end of it. So, if you want to keep playing, if you still think you have something left to give, then I say you keep going.
You'd rather them find out the hard way.
I'd rather them find out the hard way, and I'd rather them stick around and help the younger generation come in, be like the Vince Carters of the world, just carve out your niche where you can still be productive. I know people joke about the time that Michael Jordan spent on the Wizards. And maybe that's a less productive example because Michael Jordan is kind of an asshole. So he's not necessarily the best person to have around trying to teach other people. I feel like Vince Carter is one of the best examples of that, or Dirk Nowitzki. He got to the point where he retired when he became a liability. I don't want to lump Tim Duncan in with that because I think Tim Duncan probably had another 5 years or so where he could have been productive and not a liability. It's part of it also is like, I want to see these leagues expand to more than the number of teams they have. So like the longer the older players stick around, the more the talent spreads around, even if the talent, even if these players are not at the same superstar level they were before, they can still contribute to a growing league. So that's my justification for my weird ass opinion.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing. I think you go until you're done kind of thing. And however that plays out is however that plays out. Because no matter what, it's not necessarily how you go out. It's about what you do while you're there. You know what I mean? So like, as long as you go out on your own terms, I think that that's fine.
Yeah. If your own terms is let the rest of the people, let the teams decide when I'm done, let the fans decide when I'm done, then so be it. Eli Manning is going out on.
God damn it. His own terms.
We were both racing for that one. He was benched this year and then he came back for the last couple games. So I guess he's taking that as a sign.
I'm calling this an amicable a very mutual breakup of sorts. I think this is one of in most recent years, one of the most kind of quiet versions of we think you're done. And then that person going, okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. They're going to stay friends. They're going to stay friends.
Yeah. They're going to stay friends. I think I made the comment a couple of days ago when DJM retweeted this at us that this kind of goes in one of two ways. It either goes like 6 months to a year later, you'll hear about Eli working out. If he is not by that time behind some kind of analyst desk, because I don't really see Eli in a coaching position in a sense. I see him maybe going down the TV personality route. So I feel like that would be kind of more of his ilk than anything else, because you kind of tend to see people in three lights. Either they retire and they just kind of go away until every once in a while they come out for every few years for an interview or something like that, or they sit for a little while and then go into some kind of coaching route, or they do the TV personality thing. And I think Eli has done enough of the TV personality thing in recent years with the few times he's hosted SNL or a lot of the commercial things that he's done with him and his brother, and just stuff like that. So I think he has that sensibility to be able to do that possibly. So that's kind of how I see this playing out.
Yeah. Or I think because his brother has a lot of business ventures as well. So maybe you can go that route and just keep collecting checks. So that's, but just like, I feel like these guys should control the end of when their career ends. Also, they don't necessarily need to stay involved in the sport when they're done. If they can do, if they feel like they've contributed everything to the sport and now they just want to get away from it, then, and just move on to other businesses and take their money that they earned and put it towards something else, then more power to them.
Mm-hmm.
Eli Manning, maybe
Eli will surprise everyone and he'll buy an esports franchise and they'll be the best of the best.
It'll be the New York Giants Madden franchise, and then they'll beat the New England Patriots Madden franchise in the Super Bowl twice. Because I think that right there is Eli Manning's legacy, is those two Super Bowl wins and the playoff runs that led to them. Even if you want to argue that he might not have been the most important factor, he was still a very strong contributing factor.
I mean, I've had my ups and downs with Eli. I was never super excited when he first became the quarterback of the Giants, and then kind of as things went.
Yeah, that started with a bit of controversy because the San Diego Chargers at the time had the number one overall pick, and I guess the Manning family very much expressed in no uncertain circumstances that he would never play for the Chargers, so they had to work out a trade, which then ended up with Philip Rivers in playing for the Chargers and some draft picks being exchanged. So I guess, when you get two Super Bowls out of a quarterback like that, I think you'd say that trade was worth it. Ben Roethlisberger is kind of the other big name out of that quarterback class, and he's won two Super Bowls. Philip Rivers hasn't. So, and he's kind of nearing, at least the terminology that I'm seeing regarding his relationship with the Chargers now is that the Chargers are not returning his calls. So,
Wasn't it also that he sold his home in California?
Sold his home. That relationship is done now. And so he's also, Philip Rivers, Tom Brady,
not an amicable split, it sounds like. Yeah. It sounds like they're not going to stay friends.
Yeah, and he, from what I remember, he wasn't very happy about the team moving out away from San Diego either to L.A. He's going to find some place else to play, and so it's going to be really weird because Ben Roethlisberger didn't play last season. Those three players. It's kind of rare that you see three quarterback get drafted that highly and all of them pan out pretty well and stay with their teams for a really long time. But yeah, that was the case with those three, and it's going to be kind of weird seeing them either not playing in the case of Eli Manning or playing for different teams in the case of Philip Rivers, or I don't know what's going on with Ben Roethlisberger. So It's almost the end of an era, even though it's kind of the blurring of the boundary there.
So last thing, we have a few more things in a roundup to just get through really quick, but I just want to do this one really quick. We did our picks for who we thought was gonna go to the big dance. Did we all pick the Chiefs?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I know you had to pick the 49ers.
Mine was completely wrong. I picked the Packers and the Titans just to be that guy, and right. I got it completely wrong.
This is going to be super duper rapid fire because JVZ is not allowed to pick anything else except for the 49ers. So he has to lock in there. So I guess for me and DJM, it is between the 49ers and the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl because those are our last two teams. DJM, what do you got?
Sorry, JVZ, but I was the one that gave Patrick Mahomes the name The Chosen One. And I'm going to say Andy Reid is finally going to get his Super Bowl, and the Chiefs will win in a pretty awesome 35-30 game.
All right. I am also going to take the Chiefs, but I think I'm going to take a 45-50 for the Chiefs to 24-30 for the 49ers.
I would say anytime. Especially like the you know, going back to the Eli Manning Giants, when you come in with a really, really, really good pass rush, you can take down the best offenses, including the 18-1 New England Patriots. That was a major upset, but it was the pass rush that took down that Patriots team. The Niners have a fantastic pass rush, so I'm predicting a much more low scoring game. I'm still scared to death of Patrick Mahomes. That man is the chosen one, and if for some reason he manages to elude that pass rush, he's going off for like 50 points. But if the pass rush can get to him, then he's going to score like 14. So, okay. So I'm going with something like, 24-14 49ers.
All right. Real quick on the basketball front. I think I'm going to hit this out of order a little bit, but ESPN will broadcast the whole of the NCAA women's basketball tournament this year. In previous years, they've skipped the first two rounds or so. So
which is weird because those are kind of like the most exciting ones, but also it's not the end of the tournament, but it's, it doesn't tell you who wins, but that's where all the upsets happen. So it's,
I think in kind of notability, I think that's exciting. I think we need more of this. I think this is just that continuation of what we've been talking about. If the media starts to care, more people start to care, and then we just get more coverage and all those kind of things. So that's good. And then the other note is, I think one of those things that everyone has to talk about, Zion Williamson has finally made his way back into the NBA after dealing with some injuries and things like that. And I think I'm going to take this in a little bit of a different route, right? Because he's playing relatively well. He's on pace to break a lot of rookie records and things like that. And I think for the media, that pans out well. But how efficient do we think he is really going to be? Is he going to be what the media wants him to be? Is the question I want to ask.
I mean, that's going to be tough for him because the media wants him to be a lot. Like, I don't think anybody has been this hyped since LeBron, who I would argue actually has exceeded his expectations. Maybe not in terms of championships, but in terms of, like his standing among the greatest of NBA players. That's the level of hype that's coming in. It sucks for him because it got to the point where like he had, you know, a bad for his debut game. He had a bad, you know, the first three quarters, and I don't want to say people, because you know the people that are that usually react to stuff that quickly are being a little bit too knee-jerk, but it's like, oh man, that draft pick was a bust, and you know, because he wasn't amazing, and then he scored 17 straight points in the game, and I guess you can find that clip on the NBA official YouTube, and it's like, yeah, you know, it just feels like a boom and bust cycle. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of how we react to sports anyways, but it's just even more pronounced in an age of social media. You know, I mean, yeah, like right now is kind of an example with this Kobe story, there's confirmation on it, and now Twitter is just completely breaking down, so it's like everything just reacts in real time nowadays, and so that includes when Zion is playing well and when Zion is not playing well, and when he's not playing well, he's trash. When he is playing well, then he is the greatest thing ever. So mm-hmm. It's going to be a tough road for him, and I think even LeBron got the benefit of not having social media, at least for the first couple of years of his career. Although, you know, he had ESPN broadcasting his high school games. So, I don't know. Your original question was, is he going to be as efficient as everybody hopes? And I'm going to take the official sports odds and ends stance and wait and see.
Yeah. So here's my hot take real quick. I think he is going to be good. Do I think he is going to end up being this player that changes the game of basketball? No, I think I have already given that, and I will continue to give that to Giannis. I think his skill set is good. I think very much like Giannis, every time he comes into a game, you see the flares of a little bit more. But I think for me, this is my opinion. This doesn't have to be the sports odds and ends opinion. I think Giannis should be the person who is touted as being someone coming into the NBA that is going to change the way the game is played. I think their skill sets are very similar in how they can drive to the basket. They're big guys. They are opposing. But at the same time, if you only play them for that, they will shoot your lights out. But then, that still being said, I don't think Zion is all the way there yet. And I think Giannis just has a more complete game. So I kind of set it up guys, just so I can talk about Giannis.
Okay. Well, I think that Zion's ceiling is unlimited, but I think he will top off around maybe the top end of the second tier of NBA players. To NBA fans, he will be a megastar, but to casual sports fans, he'll just be known as a really good player. I think right now, going forward, we're seeing the NBA where it's looking like it's going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo and Luka Doncic, who will kind of be the face of the NBA for the next couple of years. And I'm thinking, depending on what happens with the Golden State Warriors in the next couple of years, those will be the two. But I think Zion will probably be right under them. Because I think Zion has shown he's got the athleticism, he's got the ability to make things happen, but even in the one game, he showed that he already has more of a complete game. He was distributing, he was shooting, he seems to have a better grasp of basketball than people even realize, and that in his first game, and he's only 20, I think? That's 19. A really good sign. 19. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, that's a really good sign for him. I see him probably being like a perennial all-star and playing at that level, he might even get all NBA first team once or twice. He'll probably be all NBA second or third team a couple of times, I believe. He might be just right under that super mega star tier of like Zion or Kevin Durant or what people are projecting for Luka Doncic. That's where I think he'll be. He'll be right under that.
So would you put him?
He'll be like Blake Griffin.
Here's who I was gonna say. I was gonna say like a Paul Pierce or a Kevin Garnett or.
I think Blake Griffin's a good comparison. That was the player comp mm-hmm. when he was at Duke, Blake Griffin, and I do think that adds up. Blake came into the league as a super athletically gifted dude who developed a complete game over time to go with his athleticism, and unfortunately the injuries are catching up with him. But I definitely see that with Zion already. He clearly has more of a game than just driving to the basket, which is cool. And I feel like his potential is unlimited, and his ceiling is being one of the 20 best players in the league, and that ain't bad.
All right. Yep. I think from there, we move to our stories of the week. Another quick note, the Australian Open is going on. We'll probably have more of that depending on how Serena Williams does, because we don't care about anyone else. All right. We don't care about the Australian Open anymore, boys. Boom. JVC, what's our first story this week?
It's kind of an old holdover story because it's a recurring thing. But we mentioned last time the coaches that got hired, all the openings have been filled now in the NFL. And there's kind of a bigger story there that the media is latched onto. And that is just the fact that I guess Ron Rivera was the one minority coach. He basically switched jobs. So we're still at a state now where, in a league where 68% of the players are black, there are only two out of the 32 head coaches that are black, and three are racial minorities. If you throw Ron Rivera in there, the NFL has this rule that they call the Rooney Rule, named after I think Art Rooney. It requires teams to, when hiring for coordinator positions, which is the level below head coach, and for head coaching hires, to at least interview one minority candidate. And so like, you don't have to offer them the job, but you have to at least hire somebody. You can't go out and just hire the first white dude you see. Like, you gotta do your due diligence. And part of that diligence now is just make sure that you are interviewing at least one person of color when you go through this process. And I think teams are really starting to take that literally when it comes to. When I say teams, I kind of mean the owners of these teams, because I think, there's only out of 32 teams, there are only two owners that are non-white, and they're the ones making the hiring decisions. And I think we're starting to see, at first there was kind of an uptick in the hiring of black coaches, and people were saying like, oh, the Rooney Rule is working. It's helping. Even if they don't get the job, then they're still getting interview experience. And it almost seems like we're regressing. Black coordinators are kind of going into these head coaching interviews wondering whether, like, whether it's a serious interview, whether they are a serious candidate for the job, or whether they're kind of just a candidate that's there to check off the box now.
Right.
Because I think I think you can kind of hear it in the way I described how the Rooney Rule works, that it almost feels like it's an obligation for them, instead of something where they seriously are looking to change the fact that that we've got lopsided demographics here, for how this all is supposed to work. And like in a league where you expect retired players to go into coaching, and you expect coaches to kind of move up the ranks, we're seeing the demographics, like somewhere along the lines, we're losing all the black coaches and all the black players, and we're getting to just, you know, we're getting, like, I don't want to call out any specific hirings this time, but like, it feels like we're seeing candidates that are not offensive or defensive coordinators, that are white and possibly, I don't want to say unqualified, but lesser qualified than guys like Eric Bieniemy, who is the, he's kind of the candidate that's held up as like the biggest example of, like, this guy is Patrick Mahomes' offensive coordinator. He should have a job. Mm-hmm. And
right. And it's not even one of these things where it's a head coaching position, but the fact that the Giants hired Garrett, who recently lost his job as head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, right?
He's the offensive coordinator. They hired Joe Judge, who none of us.
No, that's what I was saying, right? He's not getting a head coaching job. He's getting an offensive coordinator job. But to think of the fact that this guy who has not done well, right, presumably, coming off of that job as being a man in charge, to still be able to get a job for a team that's looking to make that change. Maybe there's information that they're looking for to be able to get from him. Maybe that's why they hired him. But it's like, and yeah, there's a lot of black offensive coordinators and things of that ilk. But I still feel like we're in this position where like I think sometimes people just are given too many opportunities, even when they haven't done well.
After they fail.
Like, right.
Yeah, because it's, I think I get what you're saying. It's like the coordinator level is kind of like the safety net. Like, when you fail as head coach, then somebody somewhere is going to have a coordinator position for you. And for traditionally, white head coaches have been the majority. And so it's, like, even if you have rules centered around hiring and interviewing, like, there's still going to be the fact that, you know, white head coaches who fail are going to have a safety net to fall back on. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of more what I meant.
Yeah. And it's like,
guys, I think it was put really well by someone at ESPN recently, this particular issue. And it's that it's, people, especially in higher positions and especially in the NFL is all about comfort level. And owners, general managers, will always hire people they're comfortable with. And more often than not, someone that you're more comfortable with probably looks like you in a certain way. And I think that is an ongoing issue that hasn't really been solved, because we see what owners in the NFL look like. We see what general managers in the NFL look like. We see what coaches in the NFL look like. And a lot of those people will hire whoever they're comfortable with over someone that might be most qualified. And I think that is something that's a little hard to break. It's something that nobody really knows how to fix.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like hiring in kind of any other industry, except there's significantly fewer positions available. And I don't know how this is going to play out. Like, I don't know how this is going to look in 5 years. And I don't know, like, if you can make any sort of rule change that is going to help with this either, because, like you said, like, how do you measure comfort? How do you quantify, like, the article from the Washington Post here, which is a little bit outdated, but it asks, like, how do you quantify how comfortable you feel with a person? Like, how can a black offensive coordinator make you feel more comfortable about him in a way that can get you to hire him? Because it's like the only thing we can really quantify right now are the numbers, are the demographic numbers. And right now they look bad, but, like, what is the path forward for this? Because you can't tell owners that they have to hire a certain person. You can't, you can't force them to change. But it almost seems like we've almost done everything we can to try to nudge them in that direction. And at the end of the day, they can still fall back on, I'm just not comfortable. And who knows how long it's going to take for them to get more comfortable.
All right. I think we move on to our next thing. This one is also a little bit weird. So a big fight broke out at a college game between Kansas and Kansas State, in kind of just a weird bench clearing brawl. And there's a lot of storylines here. There's a lot of talk about one of the people who was the kind of aggressors in this fight being a player who had just recently come back from suspensions for other things, and all that stuff. Let's throw that to the side. There's kind of a bigger thing I want to talk about here that was brought up on First Take by one of the hosts, Max Kellerman, that why do different sports get different judgment calls on these kind of things? And to a certain degree, we can almost put the race stuff aside, but the fact that if this was a baseball game or a hockey game, the fact that this fight even happened wouldn't be the storyline.
Yeah, I think that's true to an extent, or we'd see like one game suspensions or so, or if they're pitchers, five games. I think in football, like when there's a fight on the field, I don't think they issue suspensions for just like, oh, you fought with each other. Or for hockey, it's just 5 minutes. Like you don't even get kicked out of the game. But like I think in this case, I think you have to factor in that somebody picked up a chair.
Yes.
But yes. But other than that, other than that, like normally you'd have a big brawl like this, and then part of it is also this particular fight also leaked into the stands a bit, so everybody's getting Malice at the Palace vibes from this. It's very clearly not that serious. Like a player didn't target a fan in this case, so it's just two players fighting with each other.
Do you think, to a certain extent, then, do you think it's because with baseball and with hockey, right? And this is once again taking particular race things out of it. Do you think it's because it's self-contained, right? So if a hockey brawl happens, the players aren't necessarily as close to the stands, right? There's that barrier. So it all happens on the ice. And with baseball, the same thing, right? It's not like players are coming from and then spreading the fight out into an area that can then involve and endanger people who aren't involved in any way, because it's self-contained to the field that it is happening on. Is it because of the danger sense of basketball and football to a certain degree, where there isn't that barrier, to keep fans either out of it or away from it.
I think that's a part of it. Just there's, I mean, the NBA game itself leaks into the stands sometimes just because sometimes the ball goes out of bounds and somebody dives after it. And somebody sitting in the front row gets just absolutely obliterated. And that's just, it's part of the danger of going to a game. I think that's part of it. I think part of it is just basketball is growing and they want to keep growing. So they want to shy away from anything that makes the sport look like less family friendly. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the reaction. Just to anchor this a little bit, Silvio D'Souza, who was the guy who picked up the chair in this fight, suspended for 12 games. His teammate David McCormick was suspended for 2 games.
Is D'Souza the one who was suspended before for like some kind of money thing or something like that?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. But I don't think this is a case of like he was suspended before, so we're going to give him more games now because it's a recurring thing. I think it's, you know, that this is 12 games for the fight and for picking up a weapon in this fight.
Yeah.
Other than that, 12 games, 2 games, 8 games, 2 games. Those are the kind of penalties that are being handed out. I think we would see less if it was a different sport. So, I didn't come into the story thinking of that kind of question, but yeah, I do see your point. And it was something that I've never really noticed before, but it's happened ever since like the 90s or so with, like even before Malice of the Palace, like when it comes to like the big brawls between, the Knicks and the Heat and the Knicks and everybody else. Basically, it was just like, you know, all these massive suspensions were being handed out. And it's like, I don't know. These guys are kind of just fighting the same way they do in every other sport. So I don't exactly see what the big deal is. I mean, it is kind of a big deal. But like in a way, like NBA players and basketball players in general, like they need their hands. So I almost feel like that you get more often the scuffle that doesn't break out into a fight than the actual fight that breaks out. And maybe that's why, because like we so rarely see the actual fight break out that when we see the fight break out in the NBA or in basketball in general, it's like, oh shit, an actual fight is happening this time. This is terrible. This is barbaric. This is this is too much. Like, we don't want them to actually fight with each other. We just want them to almost fight with each other and get separated by their teammates. And then we can talk on Twitter about all the beef that's going on right now. I think that's it more than anything.
All right. So let's move on from there to our next story. We got an esports roundup to talk about. Activision Blizzard is inking an exclusive partnership deal to have streaming rights through YouTube for their tournaments and some of their leagues and things like that. So that'll include things like Overwatch, who have primarily done a lot of their streaming for their league through Twitch, the Call of Duty League and Hearthstone. So is this a big get for YouTube? Is this something we care about? Or is this just kind of a mitigating thing of the streaming wars, as we, I guess, have to call it?
I think it's a big thing. And it just the fact that there is more than one player in the market now besides Twitch. When it comes to exclusive partnerships, and the fact that, you know, we're seeing the same type of bidding wars that we're seeing in traditional sports when it comes to ESPN and Fox and CBS and NBC trying to bid for exclusive broadcasting rights to whatever sport. That's like when we're seeing that kind of activity and that competition for these products, I think that's a good thing. And it's going to result in more money getting funneled into these sports, which is a good sign for their survival. I think overall it's a good thing.
A couple of other things just to kind of note here. So this is a multi-year agreement of unknown length, and Google Cloud will be providing the hosting infrastructure for some or most of these games.
Yeah, and so this is kind of that's where Google is, Google and YouTube are getting this. They're dumping money into this. They actually did not mention Stadia at all on this.
I think Stadia has kind of gotten pushed back into a sense that it's had a bad showing, so it needs that time to kind of reframe and come back bigger and better, in a sense.
I mean, and that's a service where I think it was like, if you're playing games that need very, very rapid response time, I don't think it's the right platform for that yet. I would imagine they're not advertising that right now. But at the very least, you know, Google's infrastructures are going to be hosting something involved with all this. So like, they get to advertise all that. This is worldwide except for China. Which is,
I guess, obvious. We know how those things go.
And I guess this was the first time that I heard about the Call of Duty League that is part of this.
I've been seeing kind of hits of this over on Twitter. So the way esports kind of breaks down is there are some leagues for things. There's the Overwatch League, obviously. Riot has its LCS and the other partnerships they have in their other regions where they play the game. Whereas things like Counter-Strike, Call of Duty, and fighting games, for the most part, have kind of lived in the tournament scene, which are kind of like either little small tournaments that maybe get them something that leads to a bigger tournament at the end of the year, or they have these kind of big money prize tournaments over a course of a weekend or something like that, is generally how those games have been played. So Call of Duty being one of those kind of big players in the esports scene has decided to move to a league versioning, which I think a lot more esports should do. I think the tournament scene can still survive, and I feel like the tournament scene should be something that is primarily fan driven at this point, as it has been in kind of previous iterations. But I think more things where we are now should be moving towards kind of some version of a league.
Yeah. I mean, I like having the dichotomy of like, this is the professional scene, but also we have independent leagues as well. Like, even in something like baseball, where they've got like five levels of feeder systems, like there's still the independent leagues out there. So like, if you don't get picked up by an MLB team that is hoping to turn you into something, into a better player at some point, then you can still go play at an independent league team. In general, it's good to see this level of growth for newer sports. Call of Duty is a fairly old game, but
It has a relatively big scene, but I think because of the design of the game,
an old franchise, I should say.
The fact that it comes out kind of on a yearly basis, it kind of lends itself to not always being the most popular, because sometimes it takes a little bit for that game to get to a playable state for the most part. So that's kind of something that's maybe for a later talk on how esports and those things kind of work. Another quick note here in the esports rundown really quick. The Red Cross is partnering with Fortnite to do a new game mode in Fortnite called Life Run Game Mode, which will help people understand the mission and the work that the Red Cross is doing. The Red Cross has previously done partnerships like this with the game Arma 3 to create a landmine deactivation mission, Arma being a army simulation game. So this is definitely interesting, I guess. I think it's more...
I like the idea that we're now using video games, and specifically competitive video games, as like the advertising arms for various services. I'm a little wary that eventually the games might end up being like entirely advertising and less more about game. But for now, I think little partnerships like this are fine. Especially when it comes to like a nonprofit organization like the Red Cross, it's like, hey, if you enjoy doing this in the game, in our new game mode, then come, you might enjoy doing this for us in real life. So I guess this new game mode has four different life-saving missions, so a little bit of variety in there. Maybe if you enjoy doing this in Fortnite, you would enjoy doing this for us for reals. So I think we talked about this for the military advertising in, I can't believe I forgot what it was, but it was for a different game previously. So I think it's a sign that esports is big enough that it's being used as a recruiting arm now. Instead of the previously traditional scenes, like just trying to advertise whenever football is on.
So moving on from there, we have a kind of a big DraftKings controversy. So DraftKings, the sports betting, the sports fantasy betting application. I don't really even know what to call DraftKings anymore.
The lines are getting blurred now just because sports betting is at least not illegal nationally. So DraftKings has kind of branched off a little bit. They ran a contest for NFL wildcard weekend where somebody could win $1 million if I think they picked the best lineup of players. The winner of that was a former contestant on The Bachelor, Jade Roper Tolbert. And she entered in the maximum number of 150 entries. So did her husband. And it turns out of the 300 combined entries, 298 of them were unique, as in like none of them matched any of the others. So when you're trying to pick the right lineup combination, first of all, I'm shocked that they even let you enter 150 per person in the first place. But the fact that only two of them overlapped shows that these two very clearly colluded with each other.
Which
especially
is
especially since they're married.
And somewhere in the DraftKings rules for this, there is a rule on group play. So this is according to the DraftKings website. DraftKings considers group play designed to gain unfair advantage over others to be, in quotation marks, unacceptable behavior, including the following: team building lineups which serve to work together and executing a strategy that may create an unfair advantage over individual play, entering the maximum number of entries in a contest, and having a third party, regardless of their relationship, put in additional entries for you.
Yep. So they actually thought this through,
mm-hmm.
which is surprising because this is kind of a new and growing when it comes to sports betting. Like, everybody's trying new things, so there's always going to be loopholes that need to be plugged. But they very clearly caught this one. Roper Tolbert basically had her entry invalidated, and the person who got who came in second place, their name is unknown, but we only know a screen.
I think it said the username in here, yeah.
But that person is now the winner of this Millionaire Maker tournament, and not this famous person who colluded with her other also famous husband. I feel like if she hadn't, like, if she wasn't famous, I don't know if she would have been caught. I think part of this was around, like, the social media backlash to this happening, because I guess both of these players, or at least the husband, is very famously involved in fantasy football.
Famously invented in using DraftKings and other things like that. For most people, it was weird because she is not a sports fan at all, at least according to this ESPN article and the research that they've done. So there's definitely something weird to go for. I mean, Sports Odds and Ends itself has a lot of research on taking non-sports fans and putting them into fantasy situations and seeing them do really well over people who actually know stat lines and all those kind of things in our own fantasy games. But it is definitely very, very, very weird when you look at the stats and the numbers, and obviously having 300 entries and only so many of them being unique in that sense. And just thinking about what that actually means, it definitely means that there was some discussion of, oh, I'm going to have this lineup. You should take then these, you know what I mean? Like there's only so much that two people looking at and I think this is only during the wild card, right? So you have even less players to pick from.
Yep.
Than the full NFL. So there's just a quantifiable math that is happening that DraftKings is talking about here and that this article is talking about here. So there's definitely some kind of collusion. I would say. I don't know about you, but I definitely would say.
DraftKings made the ruling. Both these players had lost a combined $62,000 the season before mm-hmm. Wildcard Weekend, which is more money than I could even imagine. I guess they were happy for a little bit that their plan played out for $1 million. But looks like they won't be getting any of that.
Unfortunate for these famous people. This has been Sports Odds and Ends. This has been a fun episode, but a somewhat somber episode. Definitely a lot of respect and stuff goes out to Kobe, and then a lot of somberness goes out to his family. There's still a lot of waiting and seeing happening on Twitter, but I think at this point we're just going to kind of say we are...
The news is still... This is still happening real time. They're still trying to get the story, but as it stands, Kobe Bryant has died in a helicopter crash. So all the best wishes to him, his friends, and his family.
Yeah, the NBA has canceled all games for today. That's basically... Those are, I think, the only two things we can confirm at this point, because there is a lot of misinformation going around right now. It's a mess, but on its own, it's pretty sad. So, actually, I might have been wrong about the NBA canceling games too. That's how messy Twitter is right now.
But please go over to the website, read some of the stories, the fun fun stories we've got to talk about today on the show, sportsoddsandends.com. You can follow us on Twitter, sportsoddsandends. You can follow us individually. I'm at King Cash, JVZ's at JVZ. DJM is Call Me DJM. And just have good times. Enjoy sports and just have good fun times. We'll be back next week with more Sports Odds and Ends. And until then, see you next time, sports fans.